Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And despite this shutdown of rugby, the lockdown of people, we are here in our respective TMO shipping containers to bring you a second podcast of the week. This one focusing on a classic match that we've all watched, and thank you for watching as well, the 2011 Heineken Cup final between Northampton Saints and Leinster. JB, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim. And you?
I'm very well. How much did you enjoy this game?
It is unbelievably enjoyable, is the answer. I've got a lot to say about this.
Phil, what about you?
Hello, Tim. Loved it as well. It's incredible to watch it. Incredible to watch back. It's incredible to watch that first half, knowing what's about to happen in the second half. I loved it.
Absolutely right. We did get contacted by someone, one of our listeners in America, just to say, I'm really loving these classic games. It's helping me. These are games I've never watched, wasn't aware of. So when you talk about ones you're doing in future, could you avoid spoilers? Because we referred to the comeback, which said he took a slight gloss off it for him. So sorry about that.
Yeah,
but I agree with you, Phil. Like, knowing the chalk and cheese between the two halves was amazing. But something you touched on the last podcast, JB, was exactly what I thought about this game, which is suddenly you had a game of rugby which is now nearly 10 years ago, which resembled rugby right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas 10 years prior to that, and it was a game that looked very, very different.
Yeah, particularly the way that Northampton play as well. And I don't know if I'm... I didn't... When you watch a game, it's hard to watch it and analyse it. I think analysing a game is far harder and far different to just watching it. But certainly the way Northampton played, it looked like they had some sort of modern structure in place. Not so much Leinster, but definitely Northampton.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Leinster, well, it's hard to know what to make of them in that first half because nothing they did worked. They got two or three phases in repeatedly and then tried to force a knock-on or an offload or do something, and it just repeatedly failed and fell down, which either led to good turnover ball for Northampton or it led to a scrum, which was good turnover ball for Northampton.
Now, just to
scrum.
God. Oh, I know, it's ridiculous. Before we get into the specifics of the game, can we just like plot what was going on in the rugby world at this minute? So Leinster, Leinster were Heineken champions 2 years previously, weren't they?
2009, they beat Leicester Tigers.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, in the Heineken Cup.
Northampton Saints had been, am I right in saying they'd been down in the championship a couple of years prior?
That's right. So people that realise this, particularly if you only just sort of got into rugby in the last, well, within the last five years to a decade, really. But yeah, Northampton had some rather dark times. They were always a big spending team. Funnily enough, the European Cup for Northampton, I think, has a special place to them in the same way as a special place to Saracens and Leinster, because the Heineken Cup was the first trophy that club ever won, the first major trophy ever. So despite all of their history and where they've played, they've never won a league, they've never won a Pilkington Cup up until that point. They've never won anything serious. until they won the biggest competition that you can win in the Northern Hemisphere under Pat Lam of all people. So for Northampton, I still think the Heineken Cup, or the European Champions Cup as it is now, is a very special cup to them.
But they hadn't won it
in 2000.
When did they win it? So they won it in 2000, wasn't it?
Yes. 2000, they beat Munster in the final in 2000.
Nick Beale, and who, what the other names?
Well, you got Mendes, you had Tom Smith, you had Budge Pountney,
yeah.
Grayson.
James Grayson. Of course, Paul Grayson. And Matt Dawson. No,
James Grayson was probably a twinkle in his dad's eye in 2000.
Dawson, Grayson, John Leslie, Ben Cohen played that game. Pat Lam, I'm trying to think, Rod Burr, there's another big guy. Bayfield
and Bomber. Oh, yeah, Tim Rod Burr, yeah.
Andrew Blowers, maybe?
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. So, yeah, you're right. This competition had a special place, but a couple of years prior, so this was the 2011 final, and I think you're absolutely right to plot the context to this, which was 2 years prior, Leinster were European champions. Northampton Saints were championship champions, getting back to the Premiership, I think it was.
Yeah, and there's also a really interesting point about this team as well, which the age profile of it. And now, if you look at it, you probably say I'm wrong. So you know, look at it independently. But the age profile of those players is it's quite exciting because they're all very, very young. You don't think of them as young because obviously, you know, we're 9 years on in the future. But you've got people like Chris Ashton who's still playing. Foden is still playing. Laws.
Callum Clark. Laws was young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Callum Clark.
Alex Waller was on the bench.
So 9 years ago, right, these guys had just started their career. And one of the things about this team which I really like is, I don't know if I like, it wasn't a product of good scouting, let's put it that way. It is my belief, at least, that Northampton got a real steal in getting Malander in, because he's a good coach, but also he really leveraged his experience with the England under-20s. All of these lads that played well for Northampton tended to play for... I've forgotten his name now. I just said his name.
Malander.
Yeah, for Malander when he was the England under-20s coach. And that's basically what they did. That's why this squad has roughly the same age profile all across it. And probably the reason that it all got old at the same time too.
Yeah, there's a few more experienced heads in there, but not too many. And even people who we'd think of as experienced heads, like Phil Dowson and Roger Wilson.
There we go.
They were 27, 28 kind of age. Lee Dixon and Stephen Myler were younger than that, 25.
I would say that Dowson was younger. I'd say Dowson was 23.
No, Dowson...
He must be about 38 now.
This was 9 years ago. He was 29. He was 29 in the game.
Oh, there you go. Sorry. I take it back.
It was interesting seeing Dylan Hartley captaining, because he was another one who was very young at that age to be captaining
now
Northampton in a Heineken Cup final.
I know what you're going to say, but weirdly, this does actually have the fingerprints of Sale Sharks all over it. And one of the reasons is a lot of the lads, or at least two of them, which I can immediately think of, they followed Malander over from Sale, because Malander and Diamond were actually running Sale together for a little while, and they also worked together at England under-20s, which is why they ended up with Christian Day and Foden. And they actually bought Foden on the premise, this is unbelievable now, but...
Scrum half.
Yeah, he always wanted to play scrum half.
I remember him at Sale, I remember him at Sale tearing it up at fullback, but then he moved to Northampton because he thought he was a scrum half. Well, he was a scrum half.
Yeah, that's what they told him. They said, look, if you come over, we will play you at scrum half. And they continued to play him at fullback. And which, in hindsight, was correct.
Yeah, he had a few flashes of brilliance in this game. Not too many, but a few. The outside break late on in the second half where he goes around O'Driscoll was awesome.
Yeah. So I think the composition of the two teams is fascinating because on the one hand, you've got Northampton, who are phenomenal club players. I mean, they are as top-end club players as you can get. They're exactly who you want in the grind of the Premiership. Across from them, though, these guys are not just good club players. These are some of the all-time greatest players. I mean, you might look at that combination between Darcy and O'Driscoll. I mean, I was thinking of this. I don't think there's a better combination of centres ever to play the game. Maybe Nonu and...
And Conrad Smith.
Something maybe, like that?
Maybe. Yeah, it's one of the all-time greats.
It is.
And with the young Johnny Sexton, who was still very young at this stage, but yeah, has gone on to be one of the all-time greats. And guys like Heaslip, O'Brien, Leo Cullen, Kian Healy, who was another youngster, and Issa Nasewa, who he got one cap for Fiji, didn't he?
Mm.
Which prevented him from ever playing for the All Blacks. But he's such a class all round operator. Because he's played 15, he's played on the wing, he's played in the centre. I think he's even played 10 later on in his career. Certainly he was kicking for a long period in his career. He's just absolute class. He's such a Rolls Royce of a player.
Yeah. But then you're right. But like, this is 2011. They were just about to come into their prime and be this golden generation for Ireland. But those names, I mean, it's when you look back at all of those names and just, you know, 10, 12, 13, Bod, Darcy, O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Even like Horgan. I mean, I've never been a big Horgan fan. In fact, I've always thought he's pretty average.
I'm a massive Sharon Horgan fan. Catastrophe is an amazing TV show.
I love Catastrophe. It's
not seen it, but so I know who's Sharon Horgan.
It's so ridiculous. We watched it when Thomas was about 2 or 3 months old. It is so accurate.
Brutally real, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's so like painfully funny because it's so real.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Watch it. It's really good.
It's good. You'll enjoy it, mate.
And if you don't like Shane Horgan, you'll like his sister.
Well, I'm reevaluating. I'm reevaluating right now how much I dislike Shane Horgan as a player, because I thought he's tremendous in this, really effective.
I really like him as a bloke, as a pundit and stuff. He speaks really well.
Yeah. He's a bit of a, not a weird one. That's not the right way, but right way to put it. But he's a complex character. And the story about him is, on the Lions tour, the Clive Woodward one to New Zealand, one of the things he loved to do was have debates with Alistair Campbell, who unbelievably was press secretary. That people keep forgetting that.
How could you possibly forget that? It's ridiculous.
Brilliant.
It is the most ridiculous thing in sports history, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unless next Lions tour to South Africa, they take Dominic Cummings to coach the scrum.
Actually, you mentioned the Lions tour. This is something we didn't mention on the other podcast. Like, the situation as it is, the Lions tour, usually being in an odd-numbered year with no other big events happening, is a big deal. But it's now got to compete with the Olympics and the European Football Championships.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point, that.
I mean, I'll still be watching it.
That means even more likely that we'll, get a press accreditation and get there.
Exactly. They're going to need someone to cover it.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. But no, yeah. So we set the context for this game. Can I just kick off with that Northampton front row? Is that the most destructive club front row ever?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Isn't it incredible how you remember things compared to what the reality was? So I always remembered them running round a lot. I forgot
Tongawea, Hartley, Majati.
Yeah, I forgot that they were good at scrimmaging. I completely forgot that.
I definitely didn't forget that. I remember them being ridiculous. I'd forgotten how good they were.
Yeah. Tongawea in particular. So I was going to save this point for later, but as you mentioned him, I'll put it up. I'll say it now. This game, people might be mistaken into thinking it was all about Sexton, because I think he's 3 points away from beating the record of points scored in either a final or even maybe a European Cup game. I think he had 22 points on his own before any other Leinster player managed to put the ball down. So you might think, oh yeah, this game is all about Johnny Sexton. No, it's not. It's about Tongawea primarily, and then it's about the replacement Leinster tighthead.
Yeah, the change, because Tongawea's scrummaging. So it was Dean Ryan doing some of the pitch side analysis, wasn't it?
Yes.
And he did halfway through the first half. I think he did a couple of them, but there was halfway through the first half, there was one scrum where Mike Ross tries to collapse the scrum.
Yeah, he does.
And yeah, Dean Ryan is saying, look, Ross is doing exactly right here. He's trying to bring it low. And Tonga Weir just gets under him, which, considering Tonga Weir is about 6'4 or 6'5,
a huge bloke,
incredibly tall for a prop, gets under him and just doesn't let him collapse and powers him up so much that Mike Ross pops out, head pops up out of the scrum, and then Northampton really go to town.
Yeah,
that was one of the incredible things, was the continued drive of the Northampton scrum after they've already forced one of the props or both of the props up and out.
Yeah, and it also highlighted for me one of the more ludicrous stages of our game. And that was someone did a really good video on this. I'm sorry, I can't remember their name, but they're on Twitter. If you look around, you'll find it, right? But it's a video about the evolution of the scrum. I'm sure it's one of the analysts that...
Petrus.
It was Petrus. Well done. Well done. It was, yes.
Petrus Duplessis.
There's a very brief history of scrimmaging. And one of the most ludicrous periods of scrimmaging was the one that we're looking at now, because the hit was so important. And that's what Tonga Weir gets right every time he gets the hit right. And so, the instability of the scrum is unbelievable, because of course they hit so hard and they're trying to keep it stable whilst wrestling. And this is what Tonga Weir is an absolute professional at. So he wins that hit, and that allows him just to devastate Mike Ross. And the job he does on Mike Ross is frankly an embarrassment.
But what was interesting is, the whole game goes chalk to cheese first half to second half. But the second half, yes, you're right, the Leinster tighthead comes on and really steadies the ship in an amazing way. However, the ship was steadied, and in fact, Leinster won penalties at scrum time and stopped Northampton with the same front row that was absolutely bullied in the first half.
Go on, sorry, Phil.
Well, so I was watching this and thinking about it, and I actually think Northampton were culpable in their own downfall. And by that I mean, so Northampton, obviously, the scrum defined their first half, but also they played really quick ball in the first half. So they minimized the time that the ball was in at the breakdown. And I assume that was partly to stop the back row of Leinster, and indeed the centres of Leinster, scavenging the ball, because O'Driscoll and Darcy were superb jacklers. So to try and stop that, they sped up all the rucks. So they got really quick ball from all the rucks, which meant they were moving a lot. And they didn't go particularly wide. They struggled to get Ashton and Foden into the game, actually. Meant that their forwards were carrying. In the first half, they kept on referring to Tonga Weir's carrying. And I really think that Northampton's own tactics of having that sped up ball in the first half meant that Tonga Weir and Mujati were out on their feet come 45 minutes.
I completely agree with that, because I think what Northampton had right was they had the right tools for the job. Now, with hindsight, you look at the game again and you know what's coming, and you're looking at it and you think, there are signs that Leinster are far from dead, but you don't see it necessarily when you watch it first time round, because of all the tries. But the tools that Northampton have at their disposal are their two centres, who are very direct. Downey and Clark. I've always liked Clark. I thought Clark was a superb player who never really got... Well, injury hampered him. But they were getting over the game line at will. The forwards were working hard. Do you know what I said before? I believe that Northampton were playing with a modern structure. One of the reasons I thought that is because the props kept on popping up on the wing. So... I'm not sure how long they've played the, a 2-4-2 or 3, whatever it is. Whatever the
2-3.
Whatever the formation is that you want to play. But that's certainly what struck me, is Tonga Weir was always going in that wide channel and Mujati was going on the outside channel. And that brings me to a phenomenon which is very common for us today when we're watching rugby, but might not have been that common then, which is, you need quality replacements. It isn't about your front three. It's about your front six, i.e., your three on the bench and three on the field.
Yeah, and that was interesting, because when Mujati gets yellow carded in the first half, and Tom Mercy comes on,
he batters him as well.
Yeah. One scrum goes great, but then we don't see him again. And by the time the replacements come on, it's already too late, the Northampton front row replacements. Now, Tom Mercy was an interesting one. So, do you know anything about Tom Mercy, either of you two?
No.
I'm pretty sure as soon as you tell me about him, I'm going to know. But no, not off the top of my head.
So, Tom Mercy, a few months ago, was in the news, although you might not have known that it was him. And this was one of the biggest rugby stories, well, ever.
So, what have we got? We've got Saracen salary cap.
Yep.
And there was another one, wasn't there?
No, Saracen salary cap.
Okay. Is he a business advisor for Nigel Ray?
Kind of.
Oh.
He's married to Lucy Ray.
No.
And he is a director of, a few companies by the looks of it, but MNB Promotions and Premier Rugby Investment, or Premier Rugby Promotions, Premier Team Promotions, who were referred to as MNB Promotions in the Dyson report, who are the company that paid Mario Toji £95,000 for doing nothing.
Well.
So a nice little link back from that game to this one. And another little link back, nothing too major, but it's quite nice that we are recording this on the 29th of March 2020, which is Chris Ashton's 33rd birthday. So happy birthday. Yep.
By the way, there you go. Has there ever been a better time to do a deal than when Chris Ashton did his? Fair play, fella.
Absolutely fair play. The market looks very, very different right now, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope it wasn't in his probation.
Sorry?
I hope he wasn't within his probation period.
He might. If rugby contracts have probation periods, yeah.
Yeah, Chris is not working out.
Yeah, it's a good point, that, actually. He might be expendable.
I can't imagine rugby contracts work like that.
I've got no idea.
But can I say on this, we've spoken about the way that the game looked, jumping forward in time to back in time from when we looked at a game in 1999 last week. The TV coverage was light years from where the BBC had it in 1999 for that game we did last week to what Sky Sports had in 2011.
Yeah. I mean, it's come on again since then. But you're all right, the Sky Sports... I mean, I wonder how much of this we notice because you work in media and therefore we care about it because we're always watching it. I wonder how much people actually do care about it.
You do see people getting people who only watch rugby during internationals, and I know people like that who get frustrated at the BBC's antiquated panels and commentary team.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good point, isn't it? Which is, you know, the commentary teams probably in the BBC have been almost the same for certainly the analysts have probably been similar for the best part of 20 years. Brian Moore's been there for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And the game is just completely different. Like, to the point that, you know, if you want to understand the game now, I'm not even sure any one individual can understand the entirety of rugby now.
But I think it was more than that. I think it was... Oh, sorry, I was going to say, it's more than that. So last week, the game we looked at was, there was John Inverdale and a couple of guys. Was it... that was that 1991 game. What was I watching? I can't remember what I was watching. But anyway, last week's one, last week's one, there was very little kind of build-up type stuff. Very not much production value. It was just basic camera shots and the stuff. But this one had the what's become now the Eddie Butler voiceover bit. But it had all those emotive things in it, in the coverage that really only kicked in. The professionalism of rugby on the pitch was replicated off it as well.
Yeah, and you had the, which we mentioned before, the Dean Ryan in play pitch side analysis.
Yes.
And then you had Will Greenwood, who is very good at that kind of that pitch side analyst, and then he was straight onto the pitch afterwards as well, doing the wrap-up interviews, which were pretty good, actually, and pretty telling from when he was asking O'Driscoll and Sexton about what they spoke about at half-time, which is obviously the pertinent question in this game. And you got quite good, open, honest answers from those two as well, particularly because Greenwood would have played with O'Driscoll, wouldn't he, on the Lions?
Yeah.
So he would know him well.
Yeah. There's not a huge age difference, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
5 years?
A bit more, maybe, I think, in my head. Oh, no, maybe not even that much, yeah. But, yeah, they played together, so... yeah. But, yeah, that stuff was really interesting. I did like the references at half-time to, like... Because they were debating during the comms whether it was Joe Schmidt or it was Leo Cullen or whether it was Dricko or who spoke up at half-time. And O'Driscoll said it was Sexton, who was one of the youngest men on the field. And he said it was him that really led the changing rooms at half-time, which was incredible.
I'm not sure if it was a commentary gaffe, but it's one of those... Because all the players were quite young, and like you say, Phil, about it's quite incredible that it was Sexton who was the guy telling everyone, you know, exactly what to do. And yeah, you know, this game also had a bit of a showcase for what was to come later in a lot of these players' career. One of the commentary team referred to Callum Clark as one of the quiet men of Northampton. I thought that is a remarkable statement, which has never been repeated before or since about Callum Clark.
Well, I guess he was in Dylan Hartley's shadow.
Yeah, I guess this was it Rob Hawkins that he met at the bottom of the row?
Yes, I think it was.
I imagine it was either before, I guess it was before that. There is nothing about Callum Clark and his 6'4" frame which is quiet. Nothing.
Can I just say, Northampton have got some of the best raw materials to make great kits. And in fact, their kit from...
Oh. Well, juice and supply, mate.
Yeah, their kit from 2000 when they won the Heineken Cup was wonderful. Just the classic thin gold, thin black and thick green hoops.
Yeah, perfect.
Beautiful combo. But they managed...
Tetley on the front.
They managed to... Tetley Bitter. Yeah, you're right. But they managed to balls it up so much. And this was another year when they messed it up. I didn't like this kit at all.
No, I was watching these two teams come out and I thought they both look like... They could have been walking out yesterday and it looks fine. I think both of those kits were fairly classic.
So I didn't like this kit as much as some, just because it needs more of the black and yellow. It was a bit too green. But the colour palette of it, you're exactly right, Tim. The raw materials that Northampton got are superb. I'm with you. I don't think this was the vintage kit for them. This was Travis Perkins, wasn't it?
Maybe it wasn't their best version of it. But certainly, I didn't feel like it was offensive in the same way that, say, Leicester Tigers' home kit from 4 years ago was.
Tartan one, the gingham tablecloth kit.
No, the cross shirt fade.
Oh yeah, that was horrible. They've had some stink as well. The camouflage as well was heinous. I mean,
they've had some pretty... No, that was Bath, wasn't it, the camouflage?
That was Leicester, I'm sure it was.
Although, actually, I thought the Bath camouflage was quite cool.
I know Bath did have a camouflage kit as well.
Blue, pink and white.
Ugh.
Quite like that, actually. Anyway,
I didn't stick around for the post-match chat. What did Brian O'Driscoll say that Johnny Sexton had said?
So he said, Brian O'Driscoll said he referred to other sporting moments and said, like, look, this happens, comebacks like this do happen, and they happen in finals. And Sexton himself said he referred to the Liverpool in 2005, I want to say.
Istanbul. When they were
3-0 down. Yeah, Istanbul. Yeah, when they were 3-0 down and come back to win it. So it was the reference to... Now, obviously, they can't quite do it justice in those post-match interviews, but it's just good to get the insight into... The most interesting thing was who spoke up. Because you look at that, you do look at the Leinster team, And there are experienced guys and experienced leaders. Nasewa, O'Driscoll and Darcy are in their early 30s.
And their future director of rugby, Leo Cullen.
Yeah, Leo Cullen and Nathan Hines are in their early 30s and have been two quality players who've played all around the world. Oh, well, Nathan Hines has played.
Jamie Heaslip was the British and Irish Lions number 8 in the recent tour.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, Phil.
No, I was just going to say it's the fact that Sexton did stand up. And this, I think this was, I was looking back at the Six Nations, and this game does seem like a bit of a turning point, because and this year was a bit of a turning point for Sexton, because he did play and did win the Heineken Cup in 2009, but didn't really secure the Ireland jersey full time until 2011.
He was always in a battle, wasn't he?
Yeah, the year before this, he and Ronan O'Gara, one started 2 games, one started 3 games, and the games that they didn't start, they played the last 20-30 minutes. So they were in 2010, they were still, the Ireland number 10 shirt was still very much up in the air, but at this point in time it became Sexton's properly for the foreseeable future, for the rest of the decade.
And this will be a game that, you know, Johnny Sexton's nearing the end of his career now, but in years to come, people will look back.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can talk about this game and talk when they talk about Johnny Sexton's career.
24 points or 26 points for the entire game?
But he scored, so all but the Nathan Hines try was from Sexton. So 28 points from him.
Jesus.
And including when the comeback started, when they went ahead, when Leinster went ahead to 23-22, at that stage he had scored every single point for Leinster.
Now, because obviously we didn't see it, well, we did see it live, but we weren't watching it live this time. In the first half, because obviously you're watching it with hindsight, did any of you get the feeling about what was about to happen? Did any of you see any of the warning signs?
Yeah, I want to say yes. And I mentioned it early on, and it was the failures of Leinster. They were getting 2, 3, 4 phases together, and then knocking on or turning over at the ruck. And there was a great break by O'Driscoll.
Yeah, when he misses it.
Yeah. Great break. And gets into the 20, deep into the 22, and loses the ball in contact. And you think, God, if that sticks, or if he just holds that, it's on.
And the same with Strauss as well. Strauss drops the ball.
Yeah.
Which could go the length of the field easily.
Yeah, it's on about the halfway line from a break. Horgan and Redden are involved.
But the flip side to that is I wouldn't have seen it coming, because if I was sat there at half time, I'd have been saying, even if Leinster make those passes stick, they're not going to be able to generate enough momentum, get enough territory, because they're going to be cut and they're going to cough up 3 points here and there at least a few times through the half due to the scrum.
Yes. That's a very good point, because at half time, you cannot see Leinster getting back into that scrum at all.
I don't see Leinster getting into the scrum, but
and again, it's not really fair to say I thought they were going to lose this. I didn't. But because you get the benefit of hindsight, there were a few areas of the game where Northampton were very loose, and you never give Leinster credit for any of it, really. Number one was the discipline. When Hartley barrels over that ruck, and I think they're in their own, in Leinster's 22, gives away a penalty. You think, I mean, that's just stupid. Then there's the majority yellow card.
Yeah.
And so they are starting to struggle a little bit with their discipline. The other thing as well is, they were completely dominated, in my mind, by the Leinster lineup. Now, Leinster didn't win many of, if any, of the Northampton ball, but Northampton left them wide open at the back, and they carried on exploiting that back. So, although the scrum was a mess, it turns out it was only the scrum that was the real difference, because you can see all the missed opportunities in open play. You can see the lineup functioning well, and as soon as they fix that, they're at the races. Plus, the Northampton's discipline is bad when they're good.
Yeah, when things are going their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it was, I think, 4 scrum penalties at 24 minutes and 1 scrum win against the head by 24 minutes in.
Yeah. Now,
if you're not, I mean, they're winning by a lot, but you might actually argue they need to be winning by more. Well, no, you don't need to argue. They needed to. They actually did need to be winning by more.
Yes, they need a lot more, as it turns out. Yeah. Did either of you notice the referee?
Romain Poix.
Yeah.
Romain Poix, looking very young.
Name as a scrum expert, according
yes,
to...
Yes, I clocked that, Stuart Barnes. You will not find a more definitive scrum referee of the scrummage than Romain Poix.
I noticed that as well.
It's a bizarre statement to make, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one of the bad things about watching this game was having to watch it with Stuart Barnes commentating. I'm sorry. Just yeah. I can never enjoy it. I don't know what it is.
I can't enjoy it. Stupidly, I shouldn't have done it, but I did. But I mentioned this to some of the people at Sky. And I just assumed it was kind of common knowledge that everyone thought that Stuart Barnes isn't particularly good on air. And he's not, is he? He's just not. It's just not. And it was like I'd insulted their mum. Or I just assumed everyone knew, but they clearly didn't. And, well, he's very highly regarded in Australia. Like, I don't care. I don't care how highly regarded he is in Australia. But that was the actual comeback. So when I said, yeah, because he asked me, like, what do you think of the broadcast last night? And it was one of the World Cup warm-up games before we went to Twickenham to do our live show. I said, yeah, the broadcast was superb. I really enjoyed it. I thought we did a great job. But I think it's time that maybe Stuart doesn't do all the games, that kind of thing. Maybe the games moved on. And it was as if I'd insulted their parents.
Tim, you're a big Stuart Barnes fan, aren't you?
I've always had a soft spot because we've got to remember, did you used to watch the rugby club on a Thursday night?
Yes.
see what Sky Sports, I've just taught that they pushed it on from where the BBC had it. And this game was another example of it. And I agree with you when I say it's been pushed on again, and I am biased, obviously, but I do think that BT Sport have taken it on another step. But, JB, you there?
Yeah, I can hear you, mate.
Yeah, sorry.
Hello.
Then, the rugby club on a Thursday night, I used to get back from training, sit down with my dinner, watch the rugby club. I loved it. I love Stuart and Dowie doing their little chat, and then you get the championship highlights, and then you get an interview with someone, and I used to love it.
I love the rugby club, I'm not going to lie. Was it Durden Smith that used to do it?
No, I think it was just Stuart and Dowie.
No, it was. It was Durden. I'm sure it was Durden's.
No, it would have been... No. I know who it was. It was... I can't remember the guy's name. What's the chap's name? He was the guy being the anchor on this one. He used to be one of the presenter. He used to be the presenter. Had like blondish brown hair.
Simon Lazenby.
Yes.
Stuart Lazenby.
It was Simon Lazenby.
Wasn't him, mate. I'm telling you, it was definitely Durders.
No, I'm not having that.
I guarantee, because Durders, right, did that, and then he moved on to, do you remember the Channel 4 breakfast show? Is it AM or something?
Oh yeah, it was what followed up the Big Breakfast. Yeah.
He presented that. And that's why I know, because I remember saying, that's the guy from the rugby club. So that was when I was in school that show was on.
Well, we can find this one out. That but I have very, very fond memories of my Thursday nights coming back from training.
It's kind of now that I know better. I will say this about the rugby club. One of my favourite things about that show was the amount of dead ends that it went on. What I mean by dead ends is they would start off a feature and you'd never see that feature ever again. So they had one feature called The Dark Arts, and it's a weekly feature about the dark arts, and it lasted one show. Well, where's the dark arts? I think they just got to the stage that we know nothing about scrimmaging. Between the two of us, we know nothing about scrimmaging. Let's move on.
Well, before I worked on BT, I think I seem to remember something similar happening with them, which was on the Rugby Tonight show, was something like hits of the week, and it was done like a chart countdown, but with the big tackles. And then I think basically then the concussion thing became an issue, and they thought we probably better not do that anymore.
Yeah, it's a knockout. Yeah, constantly, don't mention the knockouts. Do not mention that. Yeah, it is strange how the game evolves in that manner. Oh, we did miss a story this week, but I'm guessing you won't want to talk about it, Tim.
Go on, we can crowbar a little bit extra in if it's quick. Go on.
A very high-profile man has got into trouble in the press for non-rugby-related incidents in London.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Have I missed something really?
Large card payments.
Oh,
no, oh yes.
Now you two can do a separate podcast on your own and talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later.
So the atmosphere in this game sounded amazing. And I almost think I would actually be happy if every rugby game, every big showpiece final was played at the Millennium Stadium or Principality as it is now.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because that's top of my notes, that. Is it felt like a real final? Now that's all staffed as it is a real final, but you do get the feeling, and this is not a knock on Saracens, who I respect immensely, but with their smaller fan base, if they don't get a team against them who is very, very popular, you can end up with a lot of empty seats, and that has happened. But this looked spectacular.
Yeah, definitely agree, and it sounded spectacular as well. And the Leinster fans always travel very, very well.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hospital.
Sorry?
The Principality Stadium is Wales's kind of temporary hospital.
Field hospital.
Literally on a field.
Yes.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally.
Just one last thing on this then. Oh, actually, two things. Number one is, I don't really blame them because it was 9 years ago, but the Johnny Sexton loop was
the runaround. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's 9 years ago. Yeah. It was relatively fresh. I get it might catch you out then. It didn't need to catch everyone else out for the remaining 9 years, did it?
I did. So his second try was a trademark Sexton runaround, but Heaslip gave the ball too early.
Yes.
But then Heaslip makes up for that by totally blocking, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Dowson. He just like shoulder charges him out of the way, he's the covering defender, and Sexton sneaks in to score.
I found myself shouting at the TV as soon as Sexton got the ball, shouting, he's going to loop around! So it's like the horror film that you've seen a million times. He's got a knife and he's behind you.
You know it's coming.
So true.
Yeah. So, last of all, yes, this did look like real rugby, as I call it. But I wonder if there's a sweet spot where it looked like real rugby, yet things hadn't quite bedded in. And what I mean by that is maybe the defence wasn't as stingy as modern defences are now. Can you imagine Ben Foden, and he was a bloody good player. This is not a knock on Ben Foden. But Ben Foden goes on the outside of arguably one of the best 13s ever to play the game twice. Can you imagine Ben Foden doing that in his prime to a defence now?
I'm just trying to think. It does still happen now. I'm trying to think of specific examples, but...
Well, Hogg could step anyone.
Yeah, Hogg goes wrong. Yeah, Hogg's a great example, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Or Cheslin Colby.
I mean, I just don't think people go on... I mean, you've got to remember that O'Driscoll, I mean, the equivalent to O'Driscoll now would probably be a Jonathan Davis. I mean, there probably isn't one, actually, in terms of the ultimate dominance of him in that position. But like Jonathan Davis or Jonathan Joseph or any other centre who plays outside called Jonathan. you're just not going to, on a one-on-one, step and go around the outside of him. Or is that just rose-tinted glasses to today's game?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe you're right in the... maybe you're right flagging it just because O'Driscoll was so good. They did repeatedly reference that he was carrying a knee injury into the game.
Oh, that's right.
So that might have had an impact on it.
Foden is so quick as well. He's so light on his feet.
And it was only a month after this game when O'Driscoll was getting totaled by Umang, wasn't it?
Was it really?
No. What?
The Lions Tour 2011 happened.
2005 Lions Tour.
Oh, that was 2005. Of course it was. What am I talking about?
Say, it was 2013. World Cup.
Yeah, 2011 World Cup.
2013. Yeah, yeah.
World Cup. Yeah, of course.
How far did they get in the World Cup, Ireland?
The one question that you don't need to know what World Cup it is to know the answer.
I'm pretty sure that team matched the record for as far as an Ireland team got actually. They probably
equaled it.
Every Ireland team has equaled the record of every other Ireland team at a World Cup.
It's quite an incredible record to be that consistent.
Yeah.
It really is.
Ashton and Foden did make it look, and they were very interesting as well, Ashton and Foden, because they when they came into the game, it was almost like a shock. Everything was so blunt, and then all of a sudden you get the injection of pace from Ashton and Foden, and they just look class. I do wish that they played together for longer, because they were just such a good tandem.
What I will possibly say is that I know what you're saying about the defensive weren't quite so stingy, and that did make for a great game. Paul Diggin was the other one in the back three, and you don't get many stories like him anymore. Just years and years to make it, a hometown lad, and ends up, you know, playing in a Heineken Cup final.
Was he playing at Bedford?
Well, I remember seeing Tonga Weir play for Bedford against my brother.
I think Diggin went the other way.
Yes. As
in, Diggin was Northampton Academy, and then at 28 or 29 went and played and coached at Bedford.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
I think he did that route.
But Diggin's story is quite a rare and quite a special one. He was sort of never a star player, always just a real club man, but was there when they went down, there when they came back up.
Yeah.
Kind of star players would come in and he'd just still somehow keep them out of the team whilst getting no plaudits. I quite like stories like that.
And they did mention that he was the top scorer in the competition that season, because Northampton were unbeaten in the competition as well, which is no mean feat.
Right, okay, just listen to this. And I don't know if it's true. I don't know at all if it's true. First of all, how old do you think Paul Diggin is?
Now? 43.
No, I think he's younger than that. I think
hold on. What would he have been then? 2011, 9 years ago, I reckon he would have been...
He'd be 34 now?
38?
34.
35, right?
35?
35. Now, no, this is a wind-up. This has to be a wind-up. This is on his Wikipedia page, okay? In 2013, Diggin signed a two-year deal with Northampton Saints, taking up position as player-coach. Okay, fine. In 2017... Diggin returned to his boyhood club of Northampton BBOB as player coach to lead the Boom Baby Old Boys to conquering Northampton and the rest of the globe. He currently plays at Flyhoff for the club, weighs in at over 120 kilograms, but standing only 6'2"
I'm imagining he's actually at Northampton Old Boys, which is a local club in Northampton, and someone from the club that he coaches is just having a bit of a laugh. Boom, baby, old boys. 6 foot two.
The actual weight earlier on in the thing is 107 kilograms. That's bloody big. No.
He's never 107 kgs.
And no way.
He's 5'8".
I was going to say, yeah, he's quite short. He might be 80 kilograms. He might have been 87 kilograms at his peak.
107?
There's no way on hell.
He's 7 kilograms heavier than me. And he's your height, Bill.
No way on hell he was ever that weight when he was playing.
Oh, not when he was playing. No way.
Not even close.
He wouldn't be playing on the wing or fly half if he was that big now.
No mention of Bedford, but I'm sure he did play at Bedford.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he might be one of those guys who just did his whole career at one club.
I'm sure he's played at Bedford. Sure of it.
I seem to think he did. Lee Dixon played at Bedford as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Lee Dixon.
Yeah, a lot of them got... So Lee Dixon did it because he wanted to be a teacher. So that's his transition out. He went to play for Bedford.
Ah, okay.
And actually, yeah, so there was that great article by Sam. How have I forgot someone's name? Sam Gloucester, commentator. Sam Roberts.
Sam Roberts.
Who wrote about... who was the lad, the extra hard guy who came from Northampton then ended up in Bedford?
I don't know.
He wrote a really good article about it.
Oh, is he the Paul Tupai?
That's the one.
Paul Tupai. Oh,
you probably played against him, Phil, a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did, actually, when he was playing for Bedford.
His son, Connor, is a scrum half, I think.
Scrum half, yeah.
And he was a massive number eight.
Yeah, he was a number eight or second row.
Yeah.
Paul Tupai.
And this genuinely will be the last comment I make on this game. I'll let you two have the last word. But the amount of infringements that were made in this game, which, as a guy who watches the game now, makes me just cringe, as in, how are they still on the field? The head-high tackles were everywhere. I don't mean head-high, more the seatbelt tackles, actually, and tackling around the shoulders. Things which will probably get you a yellow card now, if not a red.
And it's the body position that people go into them in, defenders particularly, which does seem, even though the changes to the application of the law have only been the last couple of years, it does seem quite alien, the height of the tacklers.
But all the grief that we give the administrators of the game for changing the rules left, right and centre, they 100% made the right decision about the scrum. The scrum's looked much better than they did in that game. And they also made the right decision, it would seem, about the tackling height. And I know we go on like, oh, it's too high, or, you know, it's night and day in terms of safety, and I'm not a big safety guy, but some of the tackles, you think, no, they shouldn't even be on the field now. And also, Downey looks to me as a deliberate knock-on, which I think would be given as a yellow card now, somehow stays on the field. So
yeah, but the Mugiati yellow, I thought, was very harsh.
Oh yeah, that was a harsh one, actually.
The Dowson yellow, I was fine with that because it's red zone, it's try time. But the Mugiati one was, like, pretty innocuous.
Yeah, I guess that proves another point, which is the refereeing decisions now are far more consistent. So you've got that ridiculous yellow followed by a load of...
I'm not sure about that.
No?
No, I understand that there is a framework set down, but in some respects, I think almost the framework works against the referees, because like seatbelt tackles are a perfect example at the minute. And I did clock that in that game that those were let go. But that would be one thing I would relax on, because there are seatbelt tackles at the minute, which aren't dangerous, aren't forceful. And yet because of a technicality, as in a part of the arm makes some contact brushing with a chin at some point, it goes down one part of the flow chart and ends up with a yellow card or penalty or whatever, when really just play on.
I guess the argument is it changes behaviour. Looking at that game, I find it harder to argue against it looking at the behaviours of that game compared to where we're at now. But I would like to see a little bit more.
One thing I did like to see, which I would actually roll back a little bit on, is there was a few times when, I think Owen Redding did it brilliantly a bunch of times, when Northampton players were just sort of leaving a foot or an arm on the ball and stuff, he was digging it out with his foot. I was like, yeah. Love it. If someone's stupid, no Northampton player has their leg just happened to be over the ball by accident. So, yeah, get it out of the way, son.
Exactly. let's wrap it up then. What was your favourite moment of this game? Your defining moment, if you like.
Oof. Oh, the defining moment was Sexton after 44 minutes. Just the way he got up from scoring that try and the look on his face, didn't even flinch, didn't celebrate, just like he wasn't surprised, wasn't happy. It was like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. And I think his mentality is the thing that I take away from that game more than anything.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do think maybe Sexton's second try, actually, partly because it is the runaround, and partly because it just signalled an outstanding individual performance that lifted a team far beyond what you thought was capable 15 minutes prior to that. So, yeah, that bit for me.
My favourite moment is every scrum in the first half. If that's
yeah.
Loved it.
Every scrum in the first half is glorious.
Yeah.
But I think the defining moment for me would be when Leinster took Mike Ross off.
Yeah, okay.
Although I would repeat what I said earlier. They changed the scrum tide changed with Mike Ross on the field. Because I was looking for the number because I was going, how can it have changed so much? And I checked in.
They changed him at half time.
No. Mike Ross was still on the field in the second half.
I
was so amazed by the turnaround. I was looking for the numbers. I was like, it can't be. Mike Ross must have got. There's Healy. Okay, there's Strauss.
Half time.
Well, I watched the second half scrum. Leinster win a penalty for, and Mike Ross was the tight head.
We'll have to come back to this, but I'm certain.
Wait, let's have a look now. Yeah, I'm 47 minutes in. There is a Leinster scrum and Mike Ross is packing down.
Well. The commentary team definitely say when they come back on, Leinster have made a change in the front row.
Yeah, there's not on this. That's 47 minutes in. Yeah. And it's the starting front three for Leinster.
But you're right. But Leinster got more and more on top. The tide shifted,
Yeah, massive. The tide shifted. It was an enormous shift as well.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. But I really, really enjoyed. I really, really enjoyed watching this game.
Yeah, it's a great one. We need to pick another one.
We do.
JB, did you have any ideas? I know you've said a few.
All or nothing.
Actually, I have a contraption to draw out a. Well, what I thought I was going to do, and I didn't get around to doing it, I wanted to put out all suggestions and then pick them out of a hat.
Okay.
And then just go with that. In the absence of that, I would probably want to do a Premiership final.
Okay.
Anyone against a Premiership final?
Hang on, I've got a list of the Premiership finals in front of me.
I'm trying to think of a really good one.
I'd be up for one. I mean, so I had a quick look after watching this game, a quick look at Northampton's trajectory in the following years. And they had a few good years of making top four, including two finals, one of which they won against Saracens after extra time, one of which they lost against Leicester, which was the famous
Hartley swearing Dylan, one.
Hartley, yeah. Dylan Hartley, yeah, Wayne Barnes.
Just at random, I would say the one... just at random, I'd say 2006 would probably be good to do.
Not having that.
Leicester Tigers. I mean, we have a lot of Leicester Tiger listeners. They're a grand old club. I think it would be good for us to pay homage. I mean, that is a good Leicester team. They made the final.
Who won that year? I can't remember. Who won?
Well, let's discuss. Well, no spoilers. Remember what our...
what other games could we do? I'm trying to think back. Like the Wasps Exeter game was amazing, but prior to that,
I tell you the one I really liked, and it's a Northampton game again. I really enjoyed the Leicester Tigers Northampton semi final when Tom Wood scores.
Oh God, what year was that?
That was when Northampton went on to win the whole thing.
Hmm.
And actually, the final as well is a gem.
Oh,
because
we should change up the clubs.
We have to change up the clubs.
I do. I tell you what, a good one was the Saracens Bath in 2014.
That is a good one because you've got the ultimate chaos of the Bath attack with all their ball carriers, all their stars. Basically, they're relying on star power. Saracens are not short of stars, but they're more cohesive. And whereas Bath have the attack, Saracens have the defence.
And Saracens only just snuck into the top four on points difference ahead of Exeter Chiefs.
Is that right?
Yeah, they finished fourth.
The Bath, Northampton, Tigers and Saracens, would that be the teams that went?
Correct, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, and Northampton finished top. And they hosted...
If that's available, that game.
Let's have a quick look. I'd definitely be keen to watch that. 2015.
I'm pretty sure I watched that with you in the pub across the road from the co-op, Jay.
Did we watch? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we did. No, maybe. No, we watched... was that not Harlequins Leicester Tigers when George Ford wins his only premiership?
No, I think George Ford was at Bath in
No, George Ford kicks the goals to win the Premiership final at 19.
Oh yeah.
His only Premiership win. That's a good game actually. Because you've got the ex-champions Harlequins who sort of are there or thereabouts. Yeah.
It's whether the game exists and is easily accessible.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've messed this up. So I don't really know what to say. I don't know what game to watch because I don't really know. I'd like to do a Prem game. Why don't we just surprise people?
What, and send one out?
Yeah. And then we'll.
We will pin a link to a Premiership final game, hopefully, that we can find. We will pin it to our Twitter account at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
All right,
wrap it up, Tim.
Thank you very much for listening. We are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beermore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking, but he's otherwise engaged doing workouts in his home gym 24/7 at the minute. And yeah, hit subscribe in that feed because we'll have plenty more podcasts coming your way, rugby or no rugby. Let the boys play. Thanks for listening.
Oh, boys.
Yes.
What about Bristol-Worcester Championship final?
That was quite good.
Oh, I would be well up for that.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
If you can find that, we'll post up a link.
So it'd be either 2015 Bath versus Saracens or about 2016, maybe 17, 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar time. Worcester versus Bristol.
Yes, there was some bonkers moments in that. Right, okay, we'll find that and pin it up at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and we'll see you on the next one. Nice one.
Bye-bye. Perfect.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.